Stays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
These days, and just in time for Halloween, that's what we're going to focus on this week. Hello, I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Welcome to The Green Front, where we report on your environment and how you can tune into what's happening, what you can do about it. But first and foremost, be informed. And one of the scariest things taking place right now is ignorance and the intensity around climate change deniers. We're going to talk about some other scary things like the Koch brothers, Proposition 23, with Dave Roberts of grist.org, one of my favorite green news sites. That's the second half of this hour. And we're going to start out with my other favorite green news site, and that is the Daily Green. Senior editor Dan Chapley has just put together a list of seven actually scary things that we should be concerned about. And in the middle, we'll get some more scary news. So buckle up. We're going to find out how, if we continue at this rate of population and consumption, we're going to need a second planet by the year 2030. Brother, can you spare another Earth? So welcome to the Green Front. We'll get on to the good news in just a moment, but I just want to welcome you and tell you if you would like to listen to past editions of the Green Front, including a recent interview with my hero, Bill McKibben, talking about 10-10-10 and the great news that the Obama administration did just say yes to solar panels a few weeks ago. Also, we spoke with the president of the Maldives, and we had the head of Sungevity Solar Company. They had just installed a new solar system on the presidential residence in the Maldive Islands. And last but not least, my shiro, Roz Savage, was with us just a few weeks ago. She, of course, is the woman who does solo rows across the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. And next, she's gearing up to do the Indian Ocean. Why? Well, because it's there and because climate change is here and temperatures are rising. You may have heard we are in the, well, near the end of the hottest ever weather on record. So record heat 2010, and it's probably going to continue. And everywhere we're seeing signs of weird weather and extreme weather events like killer hurricanes and tornadoes in places they shouldn't be. But now that I've completely depressed everybody, let's get some happy news, actually, because if we're aware of what we're facing, that is the good news, because only then can we actually begin to address it. Very pleased to welcome to the Green Front, I believe I've had him on before, Dan Chapley. Maybe it was when I was doing Eco Talk on Air America. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Betsy. Great to be here.
So you put together a list that I thought was timely, given Halloween is just a couple of weeks away, and given the fact that these are scary times environmentally, if one is paying attention. And, of course, with websites like yours, and I like to think programs like mine, we help people tune into their environment so they know what's going on. But, of course, sometimes it seems we are just preaching to the choir, so to speak. Are you seeing signs that your readership is growing, that more mainstream Americans are really getting interested and getting informed and trying to get more information about what they can do to be part of the solution?
Well, you know, I think that people are always getting more and more interested. There is a growing interest in the lifestyle aspects, I think, you know, where the environmental issues intersect people's health and their food, the quality of life. I think that trend line is increasingly on the upswing, and that's very positive. You know, it's hard, though, to look politically around the country and think that the movement's growing when you look at the projections for the election coming up and the polls on global warming and things
like that.
I think it's an uphill battle there. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I put together this piece we're going to talk about today, because we're always at the Daily Green looking for any angle, any opportunity that we can find to engage a mainstream audience. So, you know, for Halloween, we have a couple stories on bats to talk about white noise syndrome, because, you know, when can you get people interested in bats except for Halloween, hopefully?
And white noise syndrome sounds like something Hollywood celebrities would get involved in, a cocaine or something. But
yeah,
no, this is different white noise syndrome.
Exactly. You know, and all of these scary topics that we're going to talk about, we figure, you know, if fear is the topic of the moment here at the end of October, let's talk about a couple real things that that are kind of scary and see if we can capture that interest at the time when people are thinking about it.
Okay, Dan, so what is topping your list? And, boy, you had a lot to choose from.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I mean, number one, of course, is global warming. It's warmer than it's ever been, and it's not just a projection for the future, but it's a reality today. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration just last week came out with its latest report on global temperature, and sure enough, from January through September of this year, everything that we have on record, it's tied for the warmest ever recorded. So we see, and that's sort of the storyline we've been seeing for a long time. Every month, I think, since sometime in the early mid-80s, has been warmer than average. And we see all of the greenhouse emissions, obviously, that we're putting out being the main culprit, and science is pretty much on in consensus on that being the cause, and yet we see politically that storyline has not completely taken hold in the minds of all Americans.
And we just had the president of the Maldives, President Nasheed, was talking to us a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, America, get a grip on climate change. This is not something that is far away. We have no place to go. We are an island nation. We are sinking as the seas rise. It's later than you think, and we're feeling it here. So we have people on the program that are, you know, feeling it in so many ways. And all one
Definitely.
Really needs to do is turn on the news and find out what's going on with these extreme weather events, with the killer fires in Russia this summer and the epic flooding in Pakistan, not to mention record heat waves on your East Coast. And we had cooler than usual weather on the West Coast, and apparently it's all connected.
Right, and I mean, you don't have to go too far away from where you are on the West Coast to see some of the impacts or potential. You know, it's always hard to tie particular weather events to the larger climate changes, but you can, you know, scientifically, but you can say that certain things are will become more common and more pervasive as the climate warms. And if you look at, for instance, right now, Lake Mead outside of Las Vegas, the you know, that reservoir that captures so much of the Columbia River of water is or Colorado River water is at its lowest point in 75 years. That drought is persistent in that part of the country. That's one of the things that scientists have been telling us, that it's going to get drier in places where it's dry already, whereas in places where it's wet, it's going to get wetter.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why when Fox News folks say, you know, gee, it's snowing outside on the East Coast, what global warming? They don't apparently really read the fine print, which says it's weather extremes. And that's why I guess the scientific community and journalistic community were starting to use climate change rather than global warming.
Yeah, I use both. I mean, because it's global warming is accurate in the fact that the whole globe is getting warmer, and I think that's an important point not to lose sight of.
True.
But yes, definitely the changes that result from that global warming are multifarious, and they're all over the map, and they're different on one part of the map than they are on another. So it is important that people understand that.
Well, let's move down your list, and there's one that just broke today. Apparently, coral reefs are dying off in the Caribbean at the fastest rate ever. Last time it was seen to be so rapid was 2005, and that probably is connected to all the CO2 that's getting dumped into our ocean sink, changing the, you know, makeup of the water and the temperature.
It's certainly one of the long-term threats to corals and any other creature in the water that produces its shell from calcium carbonate, because the increased level of acidity prevents that process.
And if you want to bring corals, that home, that is our seafood. That's
the plant. I mean, you know, if you look at shelled creatures, you know, those plankton at the base of the food chain are the start of it all. So, I mean, whales are eating them, but everything's eating plankton at one point before you filter up the food chain to some food that we might be eating regularly. It is an important thing to keep our eyes on as the oceans grow more acidic. Right now, the impacts of acidification aren't widespread throughout the ocean, so they're not necessarily affecting all corals equally or all creatures equally, but it's one of the threats, and unfortunately only one for corals. You have pollution, runoff from nearby communities on land. you have the just the warming of the water itself, which is causes these bleaching events. And you have even, you know, down to the very particular, but the way that tourists interact with coral sometimes can damage them severely.
So, Dan, what else is keeping you up at night? what should Daily Green readers be concerned about as we approach a Halloween season where we have ghosts and goblins, but it really is global warming and garbage and things like that that we should be a little more concerned about than we appear to be still.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things, I don't know if you've had Paul Greenberg on from who wrote that this great book, Four Fish, but I've been thinking about that a lot since I read
it.
No,
not yet, so thanks for the tip.
He'd be a great guest for you.
But last week, by the way, I had Jonathan Bloom on. He just wrote a fabulous book on America's Wasteland,
yes,
and that's all the food waste.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Really gets you thinking. But, you know, overfishing just seems like such a gigantic problem we still haven't gotten our hands around. And what Greenberg taught me in a lecture and reading his book is that, you know, we're in this historic shift away from wild fish to farmed fish, but we're doing it so stupidly. We're choosing, for the most part, fish that are predators as our farmed fish so that we have to catch so much wild fish still just in order to feed them. So it's even by turning from wild caught to farmed, which you think should be a more effective use of resources, is not because of the basic choice we've made so far about which fish we're farming. So if you look across the oceans, you know, as many as 90% of the important food fish are being overfished, are being exploited at a rate that it is unsustainable. So it's a serious and immediate issue that we could
really
get
right. So there
really
are not more fish in the sea, as you said.
What's that?
There really are not more fish in the sea.
Yeah, right. It's not like, I mean, maybe on land where you're dating, but not necessarily in the ocean where you're eating.
And the bees are not buzzing as they should be, and they think they found part of the cause of that. Do you think it has anything to do with climate change, Dan, based on what you've read?
I haven't seen climate change suggested as an important cause.
Well, that's good.
Of this,
one thing
but,
it's not being blamed on.
Right. There are a lot of stresses on bees, and pesticide use might be one of them. But what the latest study that people seem to be, you know, from what I've seen, pretty confident that it's a good diagnosis, is that it's a combination of a fungus that we've always known has affected bees locally and our commercial bees, and then a virus that is, as far as we know, pretty new, somehow interacting with one another to cause this colony collapse disorder that's really, it's cost us about 30% of our bees every winter for the last several winters. So it's been a steep decline. Of course, there's some replenishment every year, but nonetheless, it's been a big problem among commercial beekeepers. And those are the guys that are driving their bees around to almond groves in California and all of these other food crops that are very important to the economy and our diet. So it is a very important issue. Beyond that, though, and less well understood or documented are declines in wild pollinators. We mentioned bats. Bats do some pollination, and we're seeing the loss of many bats to this white nose syndrome that kills as many as 90% of the bats in the caves where it's been found, but also native bees and other little other insects that are doing the work naturally of pollinating. There's a lot of concern that those populations are really declining, and for reasons that we don't fully understand, it could be loss of habitat certainly as we get more urban, but also could be the use of chemicals or something that we haven't even defined yet.
And the fungus among us is killing off frogs and bats. And I remember as a young child going down to the creek where I lived in what is now Silicon Valley and seeing those, I talk about this a lot, but seeing those tadpoles turn into cute little baby frogs was just about one of my happiest childhood memories out in nature. And now, of course, the house where I lived on, the street that I lived on, was all walnut orchards other than a couple of other homes. And now there's no walnut orchards and houses everywhere. So I think about those little froggies. And
mm-hmm.
It's, you know, of course, a loss for us, but mostly a loss for the species. But that, again, is a loss for we humans, because without biodiversity and some of these species actually provide, you know, services. Nature provides services for humans, if we want to be selfish about it, and from a human's perspective only. Why are people not more concerned about these things outside the environmental community? I mean, do you hear, let's say at your health club, people talking about, you know, disappearing bees and frogs, funguses, fungi?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I think the bees really did capture the popular imagination in more in a way that the bats and the frogs didn't. And I think that's because there was that tide of food that people were able to see, and that connection was drawn well enough that that people saw, okay, you know, not too many steps away from this wildlife problem, it becomes a human problem.
Well,
and I think that's
so,
the key
so
for the
next.
Wider public to get really interested. With frogs, it's very difficult. You know, you can't. It's hard to imagine that a cascade of problems starting with frogs. And I understand that. You know, it is hard to paint that picture. And it's and I think sometimes, honestly, the environmental community overstates that. You know, the loss of one species doesn't necessarily cause a collapse of an ecosystem. But when you have it on the scale that you see with the frogs, with this fungus just spreading across continents, that's really something. When you couple it with habitat loss, which has cost potentially more species of frogs, and pollution and the other things that are happening, then you see that it's really telling a story about a vast change in the environment, a vast change that could have not only effects on that on these little cute little critters, but on things that affect us as humans in our day-to-day lives.
And if bees go, we go. And I think you're right. That story in particular did stand out as the connections were made. I guess proving that, if nothing else, we Americans are selfish. And I'm doing it tongue-in-cheek. But really, once we make those connections and show what we are going to be facing if we don't take better care of the very environment that, you know, supports us and nurtures us, you know, it's in our self-interest. Big time.
It's true. I think that, unfortunately, you know, it would be nice if we were all such good people that we would care no matter what. But, you know, there's a lot going on. There are a lot of things to be concerned about in life. And until people perceive that it's going to affect them, their family, their friends, it's sometimes hard to make, particularly with things like climate change, where, you know, the real work of solving a problem like that is going to take a lot of changes in society. It's a difficult lifestyle change and changes to the way we price energy and get energy and use cars and everything that was very familiar. Those are big changes, and if people are going to accept those changes, then they have to really understand the how it affects them.
And that's where the Daily Green comes in, and I like to think of some of my radio programs as well, connecting the dots for consumers, and along with the problems, as you have in your great list of seven scary truths, you say what people can do about it. And that's what I've always been interested in, is the solutions, and interviewing the eco-innovators on the green front lines across the spectrum who are concerned and coming up with solutions or alternatives, making a difference. And thank you for making a difference and helping to educate Americans and connect those dots.
Well, thank you. Keep it up. You're doing a great job, and I hope that we can talk again sometime.
I hope so, too. And that is Dan Shapley, senior editor of one of my favorite green websites. That's the Daily Green, and it is a consumer's guide to the green revolution, or as I like to call it, the eco-evolution. And coming up next, we're going to be speaking with Nicole Freeling. She is going to talk about our global footprint and how, if we continue at this pace, well, we're going to need another planet. We'll see if there's one waiting in the wings or not right after this message. Stay with us. You're listening to Green Front Radio.